estimating change of shift news conference in approximately 5 minutes.
Ecom Psi Liebergott, Seymour Liebergott. Orange Team Flight Director Pete Frank. How's that? Is that better? And Harrison Jack Schmidt, astronaut geologist, to field questions about lunar landmark tracking, this sort of thing. Pete, why don't you just sort of scan over the last 8 hours of the flight?
All right, I'll start off with a general description of the activities during this shift, and then we can get to specific items at the end of that general description. We picked up at about 115 hours ground elapsed time, or about 6:30 or so this morning, somewhere around there. At that time, the LM was sailing away from the moon at an altitude of about 33,000 miles and about 5,000 feet a second. The crew in the command service module were sleeping. We were expecting them to sleep later this morning since they had worked a little bit longer yesterday than was planned. And we were working on a plan that would allow them at least one extra rev of sleep, or 2 hours, and as much as 4 hours extra sleep this morning. However, they caught us by surprise in that they got up earlier than planned. And so we didn't have any music to wake them up with today. We were expecting to do that later on. And by their getting up on time or a little bit early, while we jumped right into the normal day's activities and did not make any major flight plan revisions. The CSM is in an orbit that's about 65 miles by 55 miles. And it's 1 hour and 58 minutes and 52 second period. Okay, we did start right off with the first series of activities today, which was photography. We were taking photographs of the Lunar Landing Site 2. Those were accomplished. The next major activity was a strip photo, which went from terminator to terminator. It was just a continuous overlap of coverage through 180 degrees of longitude on the moon. And that was accomplished. Let's see, we were fairly active during most of those periods, updating photographic pads or the information that's sent to the crew. We had to update the state vector of the spacecraft every orbit to just get it a real accurate knowledge of its own position. This would help in the photography and also in the landmark tracking, which we were also starting into toward the end of the shift. We're beginning to pick up some of the lunar landmark tracking activities. The LEM data was lost at a ground elapsed time of 120 hours. The bus voltages dropped down and we lost signal from the LEM at that time, which was very close to the predicted time. About 120 hours, 46 minutes ground elapsed time, we noticed a glitch or a drop in the AC bus voltage momentarily. And we started looking at that. About 15 or 20 minutes later, at about 121 hours, we noticed that fuel cell 1 beginning to show signs of having a problem there. I won't go into the details of that. I'll let Cy talk about that in a few minutes. The net result of that was that we open-circuited fuel cell 1, or we took it offline. So it is not contributing to supplying any of the electrical requirements of the spacecraft. It's not powered down by any means, but it's not online at the present time. We're still able to maintain satisfactory main bus voltage with the other two fuel cells, and that's as advertised. So we continued on with the planned activities, which was the landmark tracking. And we got through that, and I think the crew had a very good set of marks, and we're doing very well about that. And Jack, maybe you can elaborate on that when you get to it. Let's see. Okay, that takes us through the 8 hours that we were on. The plan is to continue right along with today's activities. We will be, of course, very carefully watching fuel cell one, and we'll be going through some special management of that fuel cell. However, we do not anticipate deviating from the mission plan in any way. We expect to perform trans-earth injection at the nominal time. And that's a general summary. Would you like to go into...
Plus 12 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Plus 12 minutes. Yeah. Do you want to just talk in more detail about the some of the problems? You know,
I guess perhaps Cy can discuss the fuel cell thing, and then if Jack has any comments to make on the tracking, and then we'll go to questions.
Okay. Well, as Pete said, we can operate the spacecraft powered up on two fuel cells very adequately. The fuel cell problem first manifested itself, as Pete said, a drop on AC bus 1, which was reading about 116 and a half volts AC, and dropped for about 5-6 seconds down 112 volts. And nothing manifested itself until we noticed the fuel cell 1 parameters were changing. That is, the T-skin started, the skin temperature, sometimes called the stack temperature of the fuel cell, started increasing. And the condenser exhaust temperature started increasing slightly also. Essentially, it was stagnant. And these were clear indications of a total pump package, circulation pump package failure. And of course, one of the things that would cause this would be either a switch failure or placed in an off position, or its inline circuit breaker. So one of the first things we asked Apollo 10 to do was to check the appropriate circuit breaker and the switch. They found that the fuel cell 1 AC 1 circuit breaker was open, was popped. And when they attempted to reset it, we got both main buses, main bus A and main bus B, voltages dropped below the caution and warning limit and gave us a master alarm. We also got a master alarm on AC bus 1. And we lost telemetry momentarily until the crew allowed this, until the circuit breaker popped again. And with these reports from the crew, it became readily apparent that we had a short downstream of the circuit breaker, which essentially meant that there was just no way we could recover the pump package. At least that's the way it looks at this time. With the loss of the pump package, this means that we've lost both of our coolant loops in the fuel cell. We've lost the glycol coolant loop, the water glycol coolant loop, which is sometimes referred to as a secondary coolant loop. We've also lost the primary coolant loop, or the hydrogen side coolant loop. However, this is manageable by the sort of thing we're doing presently, and that is to not demand current from the fuel cell, and that is to take it off the main buses and not have it supply any current. And, of course, the end result being the fuel cell will cool down. And that's the result we're seeing at this time. However, there's another side to this, and that the fuel cell get too cold, and the KOH electrolyte, which is kept molten, will tend to solidify, losing us the cell permanently. So we've instituted an interim procedure for the time being with an inline heater cycling operation, which is supplying a low heat input into the hydrogen side of the cell, keeping it warm enough to not get it in trouble. And this would perhaps may be adequate during the crew waking period. Now, in no way have we lost the fuel cell. We have a good fuel cell. It has a tendency to overheat if we put it online. We've got to manage it by not keeping it online too much. However, if we must, we can purge it with the cryogenic hydrogen to keep it cool. This will circulate through there and remove hot gas and intend to keep it cool. We can bring it up, and we will bring it up for mid-course corrections where we use the SPS engine. And then, of course, take it back offline. Of course, the question that remains open is the what to do with this during the crew sleep period, which we have a big one coming up after TEI. And this is still up for research. There is an indication, at least in my mind at this time, that the fuel cell may not be a cause for keeping one man awake to manage it. But that's another thing that the next shift is working on at this time. We did do a minor power down to control the cyclic loads, such as the cryogenic tank heaters that have to come on to maintain pressure, that would tend to give us a undervolt light this on the spacecraft. These cyclic loads come on at this point, at least in the cryogenic heaters, about every hour and a half, and the loads are big enough to demand enough current to drag the main bus volts down to a level to give an alarm. So the crew has accomplished a minimum power down to avoid this, and they are managing the cryo pressures themselves at this time. And other than that, we're in a fairly nominal condition with respect to the fuel cell systems.
Jack, do you want to comment at all on how they're getting along with the landmark tracking?
Okay, very quickly. I'm going to have to run here and get back and watch it again, but the landmark tracking, as you know, is one of the primary post-rendezvous tests that we've got on the mission. It's not really a test. It's a data gathering exercise, in which we hope not only to get a very good position for the landmark 130 at landing site 2, but also get as much information we can on how well we can propagate a state vector or our targeting position for the landing site 2 revs ahead, like we have to do on a landing mission. That's the reason for the 4 revs of tracking. We can do this twice in this kind of situation. So far, the tracking of 130, the one pass we've had on it, is excellent, just about perfect. Geometry, spacing of marks in program 22 is very important in this, and John has done a real fine job the first pass that we looked at. We didn't see the data on the control point 1 on the backside. We did see a little bit of we saw the data on control point 2 when they came around at AOS. It turned out that we saw that they had John had marked only 2 times on control point 2, and it turned out, as some of you heard on the air ground, I'm sure that John was having trouble seeing control point 2 because of the glare from the surface that he gets, or the brightness of the surface he gets using the sextant. So when this came up, we advised him that should that bother him again, that there's no reason not to use the telescope, and I think he was way ahead of us on that one as usual. control point called F1, and I still don't want to explain why we call it F1, because I don't know. But at any rate, he's done real fine on that one again. Started marking a little bit late this time, but that was because the ground again had not fed him up the corrected latitude and longitude of that we got the other day when he tracked it the first day in lunar orbit. So I guess that's about it as far as the tracking's concerned. It's going very well, at least on the first rep.
Okay, please wait for the mic, and let's do the questions first to Jack Schmidt so that he can get back to the control center, and then we'll go to the flight director. Okay.